you have a Bible, that's great. I'm thrilled for you. No, really, I am. It's rare these days. So if you have a Bible, good, read it. But we also have our app here. If you go to that address, the notes for this morning's message are on the app. You can download that app and all the notes will be there, little bits that you can fill in. Questions that I won't ask will be on the app to help you just take in what we're talking about here. We've been doing a series, in fact, on glass ceilings. These are the things we bounce off against. You know, things in our life that we think we're going up and then we hit this ceiling all the time. And there's many aspects of this. We've looked at a few, but I'm particularly studying the life of King Saul. And King Saul had a lot of ceilings in his life. You know, he just kept bouncing off the same things in his life again and again until he destroyed himself. So there's a lot of great lessons we can learn from this. We've had a look at fear, and fear is probably the ultimate ceiling. And I was at a conference yesterday. We were at the same conference over here, and Bear Grylls was speaking on the video, and he was talking about fear. Do you think Bear Grylls gets fearful? You don't, but he does. He says, I'm terribly fearful. But, you know, he's fearful about, like, jumping out of planes, and I'm fearful about getting up, you know, so there's a scales, I suppose. But he said part of what he does, part of what he deals with, one of the aspects of what he was talking about was fear, because fear can control you, and fear can be that glass ceiling you hit, fear of the future, fear of what's coming down the line, fear of what people will say. And the second ceiling we looked at was impatience. And I don't know about you, but I'm impatient. I don't think I'm impatient, but when I get on the road, I get impatient. I was coming home from this conference the other night, and we got behind an L-plate driver going down Jones's Road, no chance to pass, 30 kilometres from the top to the bottom. And Tanya's going, how's your patience going? I said, going great, going great, you know. So that's the second thing. Today I want to look at one which is going to make you uncomfortable. I apologize for that, but we need to deal with this. This is jealousy and envy. Because if you look at the life of Saul, he was a very jealous guy. So if you've got a Bible, open to 1 Samuel chapter 18. If you've got the app, open it there. And you will find it. You know, jealousy is unbelievably destructive. And the thing is, as Christians, we convince ourselves we don't have it, but we do. We do have jealousy. We have to admit this and we have to deal with it. And jealousy causes pain both for the ones speaking the words and the ones receiving it a lot of times. The one that's spoken over, there's pain all round with this incredible glass ceiling we're going to look at. So let's have a look at Paul's ceiling. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 6 says this. And they were coming home when David returned from striking down the Philistine. The women came out of the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy and with musical instruments. It's all going very well so far. Saul is happy. This is good. And the women sang as they celebrated, and they said, sung this, Saul has struck down his thousands and David his tens of thousands. Oh, the wheels just fell off Saul's cart. And Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. He said, they've ascribed David tens of thousands, and me they've only ascribed thousands. What more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. Now look at the result of the jealousy that was started there, the very next verse. The next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house. How many of you rave within your house from time to time? Yes, me too. Especially if my football team loses. But he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre as he did day by day. Saul had his spear in his hand and Saul hurled the spear for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David evaded him not once but twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him but had departed from Saul. You see, jealousy, this incredible emotion, is so powerful. It consumed Saul to the point where it opened the door for an evil spirit to enter his life and start to control his life. You tell me, is jealousy important? I tell you, it's terrifying what this thing can do. Now, in the church and in your own life and in our modern society, we don't throw too many spears, do we? We feel like it from time to time, but we don't. We tend to throw words. And we try and pin people to the wall with our words. And that's what I want to look at today. See, jealousy is subtle. But we often clothe it in things like criticism or gossip. But whatever you clothe it in, it is still unbelievably destructive. I mean, think about it. Saul was a king. He could have anything he wanted. But the one thing he couldn't get was the people's respect like David had. He knew the Lord was taking the kingdom from him and giving it to David. And this jealousy allowed Satan, this is the incredible thing, allowed Satan, an evil spirit, to come into his life just through this one door called jealousy. I tell you, this is a powerful and a tremendously destructive problem. So let's talk about jealousy and envy. You know, I've been to a few conferences recently. Apparently it's conference season. And we've been to many conferences. And I've experienced some jealousy and envy. I get toilet envy. I don't know about you, but I get toilet envy. So I go to this conference, and yesterday I counted 3 cubicles, 3 urinals, and 3 showers and hot water all in the one place. We have 200-year-old toilets. And I got toilet envy. And then I looked at the car parks. The car parks are so awesome, and they actually have lines and they've got tarmac. It's not grass. And I looked at it and I thought, man, these guys have this awesome car park, and here we are, we're playing Tetris with cars trying to fit them in. And then my latest envy is foyer envy, because their foyer is bigger than our auditorium. And we're having 2 services to fit in, and they're having lunch in there in something the size of our, and I'm just going, Lord, I just had to give it to the Lord and say, I'm going to get over myself. I've got to give it to him, because I can't really be jealous about this stuff. Now, I know I'm joking about it, but there's a little something there, isn't there? I would love a big, beautiful building like that, but I wouldn't like the mortgage and the pressures that come with it. You see, we don't know everything about everything. Ecclesiastes 4:4 says this. Remember, Solomon, the wisest guy in the world, wrote this. When I saw that all toil and all skill in work came from a man's envy of his neighbor, this is vanity, a striving after the wind. And what he's saying is jealousy is futile. It's vanity. It's destructive. And it can destroy your life if you don't deal with it. Or if someone is jealous of you, they can speak words that destroy your life. It's incredibly destructive. So let's pause for a minute and ask the question, what are we actually jealous about? See, jealousy can be a good thing. I know it sounds crazy, but it can. God is described as a jealous God in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 24. Loving us so much, he refuses to let us go. He's jealous for us. And the same can be said of us towards him. Elijah, in 1 Kings 19, verse 14, Elijah says, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. See, most of our modern society, you know, you can be jealous for God, but I guarantee you, most of what we are jealous about is not God. It's what someone else seems to have that we don't. And that's the difficult thing. And we get upset about it all the time. You know, and most of the things that we are jealous about are temporal. They're not going to last forever. There's no eternity in them. They're just for here and now. So what do we get jealous about? Think about it. You know, cars, houses, boats, toilets, rewards, honor, promotion. You ever seen someone else get a promotion you thought you deserved? How do you feel? Jealous. Call it what it is. You can call it envious, but it's jealousy. It's the same thing. See, jealousy is everywhere, and we would be lying if we said we were never jealous, wouldn't we? Own up, come on, give me a wave, yes. I'm not the only one who experiences this about toilets. So most of us feel it, we recognize it as a sin, and we repent and we move on. But sometimes we feel kind of justified in hanging on to it, and I'm going to talk about that because that can lead to bitterness and destruction in our life. So what kind of things do we get jealous about? Well, first of all, the possessions of others. See, it's easy to envy other people with all the stuff they have, because the world tells us that success is measured by the stuff you have. If you're driving a big, beautiful, classy car, the world considers you successful. If you live in a mansion, the world considers you successful. In fact, I saw a sticker on the back of someone's car one time. It said this, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." What a dumb sticker. I mean, what do you win? What do you, win a free trip to hell. I mean, what's it talking about? It's the stupidest sticker going. You know, because if you die with the most toys, you're as dead as everybody else. It's not about the toys you get in life. It's about things that are eternal. See, possessions tend to come with strings attached. Now, I've known some very rich people in my time, and many of them are very miserable. Not all, but many rich people are miserable. Why do you think the suicide rate among stars and the glamorous and the rich of this world is something like between 5 and 7 times greater than the suicide rate for everybody else? Because with all their riches, they're miserable. Because money doesn't buy happiness. You can just be miserable in comfort. But you're still miserable. You're still hating life. And so, getting excited here, I'm going to kick the bucket. Rich people can be equally as miserable because, well, let me give you an example. Matthew 19, verse 21 says, is Jesus talking to the rich young ruler. You remember the rich young ruler? He had everything. And he said, what must I do? And this is what Jesus said. If you would be perfect, go sell what you possess and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. Jesus is not saying it's wrong to be rich. What he's saying is that this guy's riches was where he took his identity from. This is what controlled him. And then the next verse says, when the young man heard this, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. See, he thought he had great possessions, but he didn't. Great possessions had him. The problem is that those riches that he was holding onto were controlling him and not the other way around. Do we forget the Ten Commandments? Our society is built on the Ten Commandments. But in Exodus 20 verse 17 it says, you shall not covet your neighbor's, fill in the gap, wife, house, car, whatever. What's coveting? Coveting is looking at what they have and saying, I wish I had that. So when I stand in front of a urinal at a big church, I need to go, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's crystal cathedral. You know, but there's an element of truth that we covet what other people have. We really do. The second thing that we covet is the position of others. You know, we look at people in their position. Maybe they're rich. Maybe they're CEOs. Maybe they're pastors. Maybe they're leaders. And we think, oh, I wish I could be that. And we start to covet their position. If we, you know, we envy the respect, we envy the big cars they drive around, we envy people calling them special names and treating them with favor, but we have no ideas of the pressures they face, no idea at all. Joseph's brothers were insanely envious of him. They really were. In Genesis 37 verse 4 it says this, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and they could not speak peacefully to him. We, you know, sometimes we hate people who are in a better position than us. I was sharing earlier the story of these two idiots down in a field, and they're working together. And one says to the other, how come the boss sits up there in a nice house, air conditioned, he gets paid more than we do, and we're the ones doing the work? How come? Why is this? So one says to the other, I don't know, I'm going to go and ask him. So he went up to the boss. He said, boss, why is it that you're in a nice air-conditioned office, you live here, and we're down sweating it out, working hard in the field, and you get paid more than we do? And he said, well, it's all about intelligence. He said, for example, hit my hand. He put it in front of the wall. He said, hit my hand. The guy said, oh, I couldn't do that. So, no, hit my hand really hard. Come on. So, of course, he swung, hit his hand. The boss pulled his hand away, bam, into the wall. Oh, he said, that is intelligence. The guy went away. Okay, that's intelligence. Right, I got it. So he goes down to his mate in the field. Did you figure out why we do all the work, but he sits up there in his air-conditioned office with all of that stuff and he gets paid more than we? Did you find out why? And his friend said, yeah, it's because of intelligence. There's no wall down there. He said, look, hit my hand. See, jealousy makes us insane at times, and we get jealous of other people's, you know, position and what they do. The third thing we get jealous of is the praise of others. When someone gets a reward that we think we should get, like it's a praise or it's a promotion, we can get very jealous of that. Way back in my career, it's great to see Lexi here. I've been singing with her dad for a longer than I can even remember. But we used to do a lot of concerts and stuff together. I remember as a young musician, I did a battle of the bands, a Christian battle of the bands, and I hate that stuff. You know why? Because everybody is jealous of everybody else on stage. And I could see no good in those competitions at all. Because when you're serving Jesus, it shouldn't be a competition. You know, it's not about winning stuff. It's about serving. 1 Samuel 18 verse 8 says this. Saul was very angry and this saying displeased him. They've ascribed, you know, 10,000 to David, only 1,000 to me. And so he got very angry about, and we do, we get jealous when we see someone else's success. Saul was jealous of David because people praised him. He didn't hear the part that says Saul has slain thousands. He only heard that David has slain tens of thousands. That was actually a compliment to him. But he couldn't see the compliment. He was too busy worried about the other guy got a better compliment and more recognition than I did. And it blinded him to the truth that it was actually, they were complimenting him. They were just complimenting him more. He could not handle it. That's jealousy. You see, ultimately, when you strip it all back, jealousy is about one person, you. It really is. It's not about someone else. It's about you. It's about me. Jealousy is driven by selfishness. James chapter 4 verse 2 says this. Now James is writing to the church here. Listen to what he says. He's writing to Christians. Listen to this. You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and you quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. Do you know, in that punchy little verse, he uses the word you or your 9 times in 2 verses. And what he's saying is when you covet the success or the possessions or position of someone else, it's saying something about you, not about them. It's saying something about you. At this conference yesterday, on Friday night, there was this little Chinese guy called Ji Zhang. And he's super cool because he started a website and a whole competition, 100 Days of Rejection. So he goes to people and he tries to get rejected. He thought that would cure him of his aversion to being rejected. So he goes up, for example, to a burger joint and he says, "Hey, I really liked your burger. Can I have a burger refill?" And they go, "A what? A burger refill. You do refills for drinks. Can you do it for burgers?" "No, we don't do it for burgers." So he gets rejected, you see. And so there's this guy. He's going out there trying to actually be rejected because he realizes that what that does is it takes the focus off himself and how he feels. Jealousy is like that puts the focus on you and what you want. And trust me, you can dress jealousy up any way you like. You can put neat little ribbons on it. You can get pious. You can get religious about it. But ultimately, jealousy is about you. It really is. And because it's so self-centered, what it does is it causes you to focus on yourself. It's like taking a million selfies of yourself. It's like all it is, it's about you. And so you get jealousy, just makes you look inward, and then you get miserable. Have a look at Saul. Do you think Saul was happy? Not at all. He picks up a spear and throws it at people. When was the last time you threw a spear at someone in Christian love? You know, like he absolutely miserable. And what about Joseph's brothers? Were they happy? No, miserable. What about Cain and Abel? Cain killed, he was miserable. And when he killed Abel, he was even more miserable. See, jealousy is a poison that infects your life and slowly but surely destroys you from the inside out. In fact, in Job it says, "Vexation kills the fool and jealousy slays the simple." There is death in this one. It's not just a glass ceiling, it's a death sentence. So, when it comes to jealousy, the tricky thing is this. When you're jealous of someone, that's not really what hurts you. It's what comes in the wake of that. Jealousy is like, it's like an infection, but it's the secondaries that kill you. Who remembers the 80s here? Anybody? A few of you. Now, back in the 80s, we had a disease running rampant throughout the world. It was called what? AIDS. Now, people used to say, "This person is dying of AIDS." Here's the thing. AIDS never killed anybody. Did you know that? It never killed anybody. What killed them was another thing. AIDS dropped their immunity. It's acquired immunity deficiency syndrome. It dropped their immunity so far that a common cold killed them, or a flu, or pneumonia. And jealousy is like that. What it does is it opens the door to that evil spirit that comes in, and something else will kill off your life because it's like an open wound. into which a secondary can fall. So let's look at some of the things, just briefly, that jealousy gives rise to. First of all, fear. Saul had this huge glass ceiling of fear, but where did it come from? It came because he was jealous, and he was jealous about David. In 1 Samuel 18:14 to 15, it says this: David had success in all his undertakings, for the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fear and awe of him. Saul was fearful of David because David was more successful than he was. And Saul wasn't a team player. It was all about him. If you compare yourself, if you're jealous for someone else, of their success or of what they have, what you do is you're placing a weight on your own back that you cannot bear because you fear that you'll never reach up to their level. What else does it develop? Jealousy gives rise to bitterness. Now, bitterness, if you hang on to jealousy, it turns into bitterness. And I have seen bitterness destroy people's lives and destroy churches. I really have. It is a horrible thing. It is jealousy that takes root and it turns into bitterness. Hebrews 12, verse 15 says, "See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, for by it many have been defiled." See, I don't know a lot about gardening, but I do know that if you try to pull a plant out and it's got good roots, it's hard. But if those roots are wrapped around a pipe or something, it's nigh on impossible to pull that plant, because those roots go down and they weave between. So bitterness is not only a ceiling, it sends its roots deep down and it will control your entire life. The third thing, third secondary infection that comes in, is separation. Jealousy drives people away from you. It separates friends, it separates families, it blows churches apart. It ruins everything in its path. Have a look at Saul. 1 Samuel 20 verse 30 says this: "Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, his son, his own son. And he said to Jonathan, 'You perverse, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you've chosen the son of Jesse," which is David, "to your own shame?'" See, he was saying, man, you've sided with him. I'm jealous of that now. And it drove a wedge between father and son. And if you are jealous, it will drive wedges between you and the person you're jealous of. Don't tell me it doesn't happen. Look at Cain and Abel. Look at most families. Probably look at your family. There is a wedge oftentimes when one child has been favored over the other. And it drives a wedge in, and it's really hard to shift that because it's fueled by jealousy. The fourth thing is that jealousy is consuming. Jealousy and envy turn into bitterness and they consume you like a wasting disease. Proverbs 14 verse 30 says, "A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy or jealousy makes the bones rot." And if you want to see someone whose life is just rotting away, look at a jealous person. Man, it's terrible. And of course, ultimately, fifth thing is it leads to death. If it's left to run its course, make no mistake, it's a ceiling in your life. Yeah, but if you don't shift that, the secondaries will come in and it will result in death. Song of Songs, chapter 8, verse 6 says, "Love is as strong as death and jealousy as fierce as the grave." It's fierce. It's like the grave. So let me wrap it up by talking about how we can not only overcome jealousy, but how we can overcome words other people have spoken over us and prosper out of that. Since Cain and Abel, we've all, you know, we've had jealousy around. And why is it that sometimes, you know, I don't know if you think about the flu. I don't often think about the flu. But I had a flu injection this year. Did anybody have a flu injection? Yeah, I didn't get the flu this year. Fiona said, "I'm not going to have it." She got the flu this year. And so most years she gets by. This year she didn't. So, you know, there's something about the flu that if you get inoculated, you kind of don't get it, or you don't get that strain. And if you don't get inoculated, you take a chance. And I don't know about you, but I'd like to be inoculated against jealousy, wouldn't you? I'd like to knock jealousy out of the park in my life, to be able to stand there and look at another church's car park and not be envious. That's what I would like, ultimately. So the vaccine for jealousy is a drug that comes in four parts, and it will remove the ceiling from your life and it will open up incredible blessing in your life. So let me run through the four-part vaccine for jealousy. Number one, stop comparing. Comparisons are almost always wrong. Did you know that? Comparison is one of the worst things you can ever face, because think about it. If you compare yourself with someone who's not as good as you, you feel superior, so you've got pride. If you compare yourself with someone who's better than you, you feel inferior, so you've got insecurity. Where's the win? How do we win comparing people? We don't. And especially in a family, man, no one wins. One of the most harmful things a parent can say to a child is, why aren't you as good as your brother or your sister? Man, that just crushes them. And what you're doing is you're setting up comparisons. Some of my daughters have had young babies. Two of my girls have had young babies. And I know there's many have had babies here in the room. And when you get mothers together, you can't help it. You're always comparing. Isn't that right? My baby walked at 12 months. Oh, really? My baby walked at 11 months, 27 days. You know, maybe my baby's better than yours because, walked. My baby was talking in complete sentences at 6 months. Wow. You know, and we compare all the time. Here's the thing, mothers. Think about this. Most of your children are going to walk before the age of 20. So don't get hung up whether it happens at 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years. You know, some people just take a little bit longer to get it, and that's fine. It doesn't mean that they're inferior. And you need to chuck that comparison out, folks. Get rid of it. Because there's no good is going to come from that. I'm telling you now. Galatians 6. And listen, we even do this in church. We do. We compare all the time. If you don't believe me, try being a pastor for 5 minutes. You get compared with everybody. Oh, that message isn't bad, but Joyce Meyer did a better one. I'm sure she did, you know. T.D. Jakes is bigger than you. I know, you know. And so you get comparisons all the time. Galatians 6 verses 3 to 4 says this: if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, then his reason to boast will be in himself and not in his neighbor. What's Paul saying? He's saying, compare yourself with yourself and stop comparing yourself with someone else, because no good comes of it. There is no win when we set up comparisons. So the first step in breaking through the glass ceiling of jealousy is to stop comparing yourself with other people. The second one builds on that. The second one is to be content. If you have a contented spirit, you will not be jealous of anyone. It just knocks jealousy straight out of the park if you're just content. But we live in a world that tells you you're never content because there's always more stuff, isn't there? You go out and you buy a car. How many people have bought a new car? You buy a new car, you drive it off the lot, 5 minutes later there's a new model. How does that work? You know, you buy an iPhone and Rotten Apple brings out another version of it, bigger and better and stronger and faster and more colourful and more gorgeous. And you know, 5 minutes after you got it, oh, I've got this great iPhone. Oh, no, there's an iPhone 57. Oh, wow, you know. And all the time, you know, we're just not content with what we've got. Philippians 4, I love this. Paul writes this, Philippians 4, verses 11 through 13. I have learned, whatever the situation, to be content. We should learn that, shouldn't we? Some of you young ones starting out, you get married, you know, you move into a house and you want, someone else has got a bigger house or a better house or in a better position and you just want that. But listen, just be content where you are, because God will bring that along. At some point in the future, he will bring that along. Discontent is the enemy of godliness, I'm telling you. Then Paul writes this: I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. We quote the last verse, verse 13 there. We go, I can do all things who strengthen me. I remember my youngest daughter, Christy, trying to do the splits. I'm not going to emulate that here, but she was trying to do the, you know, I don't know, splits like this. And she used to sing to herself, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. She used to, as she would try and do the splits. But that's not what the verse is saying. She did it, by the way. I didn't do it. It cut me in half, but she didn't do that. She actually made it. But that's not what the verse is saying. It's not saying I could do all things. Look at the context. It is saying whether I've got a lot or a little, whether I'm hungry or whether I'm full or whether I'm successful or a failure or not, doesn't matter what the circumstances are, I can do all things. The highs and the lows and the ups and the downs, I can face them all. Why? Because God's strength in me is the important thing, not whether I'm up or down. I talk to Christians, I say, how are you getting on? They say, pretty good under the circumstances. I go, what are you doing under there? You know, we should be above the circumstances, not under them. But we live our life trying to get more, trying to be plentiful, and then jealous of those who have more. We just need to be content. If you're content in him, jealousy is a complete non-event. Look at that guy and all the stuff he's got. You go, yeah, I'm content. Where's jealousy? There's no room for it. Hebrews 13 verse 5 says this. Keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For he said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be content with what you have. And that's not saying don't strive for more, don't try and be more. It's just saying be content. If we were just content, we would knock jealousy clean out of the park. The third thing is to celebrate others. In church, we say we love people. We say we want to put them first. And it's about time we started living that out instead of just talking about it. Let me ask you a question. Can you be genuinely happy for someone who is successful? I was talking to some folks who were in the early service, and I just preached a message on jealousy. And they said, oh, yeah, we've been away for a couple of months, but we're back. I said, really, where'd you go? They said, Europe. 2 months in Europe. I said, what'd you do over there? Well, we toured here and we went here and we took a Mediterranean cruise and we did this. And I went, I'm not jealous at all. That's wonderful. But look, we got to just celebrate. I said, man, that sounds awesome. You have to tell me all about it. Because this is their dream trip of a lifetime. And I bless them for it and I'm excited for them for it, genuinely. And I'm actually not jealous at all, but some of you are, right, when you hear all of that stuff. You know, we've got to get this stuff out of church and out of our minds. Can you be genuinely happy when someone else gets blessed? I mean, genuinely. Have you seen the Academy Awards? Now, I haven't watched this for a while, but it's done at a big theatre from Hollywood. I've been to the theatre, and it's a, you know, great big plush thing. And so they have the guy gets on stage and he says, well, the nominations for Best Actor are... And then he... They list off, you know, five or six people, and the cameras are on each, and their photos come, like the camera comes up of their head, right? And then the guy says, the envelope, please. And he opens the envelope and he rips it out and he says, and the winner is, and you can see them all, you know, Tom Hanks. And then Tom Hanks goes, yeah, and the rest of them go, oh. And then they cut away from all that and they zero in on the winner, right? And then you see interviews afterwards with the guys who didn't win. Now, think about it. In all of the Hollywood and all of that, they're like in the top five, but they didn't win the Academy Award. And you see interviews with them. What do you think of Tom winning the Academy Award? Well, I'm really happy for him. He's such a great actor. And you look and you go, man, that is so lame. I mean, they're not happy at all. He's like, yeah, he's such a great guy, you know. Even in church, it can be like that. Paul says in Philippians 2, verses 3 to 4, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others better than yourself. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. We Aussies are terrible at this. Let's be honest. All due respect to the other nationalities here. South Africans and Maltese and stuff, you've got to learn something about our culture. We are terrible at this because we have a particular syndrome in our country called what? The tall poppy syndrome. And if anyone rises above or is a little bit more successful, we don't celebrate their win. We meow. We mow them down. It's like someone becomes a successful businessman. Oh, he's probably getting handouts at the back and he's probably, yeah, you know, I could have done that, you know. Is this true? It's part of our culture. It's like musicians and singers when you get them together, you know. And someone plays a great riff And all the others fold their arms and say, I could have played that and faster. You know, that's what, it's how we think. And so Aussies, all due respect to us, and I'm as Aussie as a gum leaf and I love my nation, but man, we're bad at this. Really bad, right? We are terrible. And when someone raises, if you get a bunch of Americans in the room around a successful person, they will gravitate around him to see if they can learn from him. But what do? We start cutting him down. We're going to cut him down. We're going to bring you down a peg or two, mate. Think you're pretty good, do you? And that's what, we're terrible for this. And listen, folks, this has no place in the church. Not a zot. Not a thing. We cannot, and we're, most of us are Aussies. The rest are ringing Aussies. We cannot let this thing rule in the church. We cannot do it because it will destroy people's lives. We should be celebrating the wins that people have, being blessed by them. You know, if someone gets a new car, awesome. Take me for a spin, dude. Not like, you know, we've got to celebrate. If we just celebrated other people's victories with them, we wouldn't have jealousy. But we are so bitter and twisted at times, it rules in our life. Ephesians 4, verse 29 says this. It's a scary verse for everyone in church. Listen, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as helpful for building others up as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. We are so quick to cut down, but we need to let this be a tool for good and not for evil. We need to speak words of life into people's life, not negative stuff, not critical stuff. And, you know, I can guarantee you, church, any church, is a haven for criticism and critical speech. Everybody has an opinion. Young Jess, who's serving in the kids' church at the moment, she told me a phrase the other day. She said, because of Facebook and stuff like that, it's like your opinion at any cost. Now, back in the day, you would hold your tongue for fear of hurting someone, but not anymore. Get out there and say it on Facebook. You're faceless. No one knows who you are half the time. You can get out there and argue till you're black and blue. You can insult people. You can call them names. You can threaten them with death threats. And you're on Facebook. So it's apparently everything goes. It's wrong, folks. They're not words of life. They are words of death. And they have no place in our church or any other. We need to speak words of life. Now, the fourth thing is that we are constantly, you have to decide, are we seeking God's approval or man's approval? Because the basis of jealousy is man's approval. You look at Saul, those verses we looked at of Saul. When you look at Saul, you realize that he is constantly seeking man's approval. He says, I was worried what the people would think, so it did. He's really focused on what men think. And then you turn to Galatians chapter 1, verse 10. Paul says, am I now seeking the approval of man or God, or am I trying to please man? If I was still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. Now, if you claim the name of Jesus Christ, if you claim to be a Christian, we need to serve him and take our eyes off man's opinion and put them firmly on Christ. We really do. Because we live in a world where opinion is just king at the moment. Because of social media and everything else. And I believe we've got to rise above that. Does anyone agree with me? We need to seek God's approval, not man's. And sometimes, you know, I like to be popular too. I remember growing up. Hey, we're going to play a football match. You know, this is great. You all line up there. Two captains. I'll pick him. When you're the last guy there, how do you feel? You know, we cut one another to pieces all the time. And so rather than asking you if you're jealous of someone, which I hope you are not, I want to talk this morning as I finish up about the words that have been spoken over you. So whether you were words spoken over you that caused a jealousy in your life, but in particular words spoken over your life that still carry pain and are still holding you back in many cases, and I know this happens because it happens to me, and I bet you it's happening to most of you. And I believe this morning that his anointing is going to be here to set you free from the negative and jealous words spoken over you in the past. See, many of us have known the destructive power of words. We've known them spoken over our life. You don't believe words are... You know, we used to say, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's not true. That is not true. Sticks and stones will break your bones for a month or two when you set it, but words can hurt you for life. They're very powerful. God spoke and the world came into being. That's the power of word. And we turn the words and we take words that should be life and balm and joy and encouragement and strength, and we turn it into barbs and we tear one another apart with this. And even in families, especially in families, many times words have been spoken. Sometimes words were spoken that made you jealous, but often they're words spoken by someone else who was jealous of you, but you take them on board. You don't even think you take them on board, but you take them on board. They're a curse that sort of dives down deep into your life. Saul was jealous of David. So Saul, it ate Saul up and destroyed him, but it also hurt David deeply. He was on the run for years trying to escape it. I tell you, jealousy is powerful and the tongue is powerful. James chapter 3 verse 5 says this: the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and itself is set on fire by hell. Strong words directed to Christians. James knew even believers would suffer at the hands of the tongue. So today, I want you to take a few moments and look at your life, because words may have been spoken over you in the past that are still hurting you now. You're not good enough. You'll never make it. Your brother or sister, why can't you be like them? Why can't you be like that kid up there? You know, these things sometimes stick, and they stick with us forever. And we have got to break that power, because if that's going to hold you back, that's a ceiling in itself right there. And I want to share with you a story from my own life. And this is one I haven't, other than the first service today, I've never shared this really with anyone publicly. But many years ago, I was up for credentialing as a pastor. And I'd had a little disagreement with the pastor in the church at the time. I wanted to do a concert in Malaysia. He wanted me to do it here. There was a disagreement. He said we should. He was jealous of them. So it was fueled by jealousy. Anyway, in the end, my credentialing came through. And it was on his desk. He just had to sign it. And he said, I'm going to stop it right now. You'll never be a pastor. You'll never be a leader. And I walked out of there and, you know, I was hurt. And I knew those words, they had just carried incredible power. You'll never be a pastor, you'll never be a leader. Years later, God asked me to step into this position here in this church. And there it was again, someone else saying, you'll never be a pastor, you'll never be a leader. You haven't got it in you. You're not good enough to be a pastor. You can't do it. And I had to, at that point, I had to confront it. This had stopped that area of my life for more than a decade. And I had to confront that and say, you know what? Those words spoken over my life, I took them to the Lord, like Hezekiah laid out that letter from Sennacherib. I took them to the Lord and I said, is this true? Because if it's true, I stop here. But if it's not true, I'm going to keep going. And the Lord told me they're not true. They're just words that were spoken over you that you took on board and believed. And they had power over my life and stopped me reaching my destiny. And thank God that I was able to pray and break that power on my life. And that's why I stand here before you today leading this church. Thank you. But I share that story with you because of the power of words that can destroy your life. And my heart as a pastor is to see you prosper and to see you move into ministry and to see you become everything God has for you to be, to see you explode into incredible things in your life. My brief is not to preach or to lead or to pray or something. I want to train and equip and release you to be everything God wants you to be. That's why we do 201, so that you can find out where you can shine. And I want you to shine for Jesus. That's what I want. But if you hang on to those words, if those words are imprinted on your life, then they can affect you and control you forever and you never reach your destiny. I don't want that for you. So I'm going to ask you this morning to examine your heart. I'm going to ask you to stop and think about what negative words have been spoken over you, what jealous words, You know, as Aussies, we're good at cutting people down like tall poppies, but we need to be better than that. So today I want to break the power of those words. Fiona went to a conference on Thursday night. It was a ladies' conference, and she got a little wristband. It has two big words on it, and the words are, no weapon. No weapon. You know what that's from, right? What's the verse? No weapon formed against me shall prosper. It's Isaiah 54, verse 17. Now, is this talking about swords? Is it talking about guns? Let's have a look at it. Isaiah 54, verse 17. This is what it says. The verse that is quoted on her wristband that she said, you need to live your life by this verse. It's so true. Listen to what it's talking about. No weapon formed against me shall prosper. In my version, it says, no weapon that is fashioned against you shall succeed. Then it says this, you shall refute every tongue that rises against you in judgment. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their vindication from me, declares the Lord. It's talking about words. It's saying those weapons that come against you, they're not swords and clubs and guns. They are words. And if words are controlling you, words spoken long ago, words spoken last week, if words are controlling you, we need to break that curse off your life, because you'll never reach your potential. You'll never be all you can for Jesus until we break that stuff off your life. So I'm going to pray. I'm going to ask you to examine your heart. We're going to do business with God. And we are going to ask him to break the curse of words that have been over your life. Many of you, probably all of you. Some of you will say, well, I don't want to really do. Sometimes we get comfortable with it. Don't get comfortable. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, just walk through it. Don't set up camp there. Don't build a house there. Just walk through it. Because we can knock this stuff out of the park, because words, the curse of words can be broken. The power of God is greater than any word spoken over you, any word. So I'm going to ask you to pray. Take a few moments, bow your heads, and I'm going to ask you to pray.